Welcome to Federal Insights for July, discussing the future of work, sponsored by Verizon.
Well, first off, JBSA 5G is part of the OUSD 5G experimental program set. And there, right now, there were two tranches. In the first tranche, there were four sites named, and then they added Nellis Air Force Base. And those sites were Lewis McChord, San Diego, the Naval Warehouse at San Diego, Hill Air Force Base, and Dynamic Spectrum. In the Tranche 2, there were seven other sites, which include Tinker Air Force Base, Joint Base Pearl Harbor Hickam, Fort Hood, JBSA 5G, Norfolk Naval Station, and several others. So we were named about a year ago in 3 July and have been around for about a year. Now, and we've been building our experiments. We have two large OUSD experiments going on. The first is in 5G core capabilities and security, and that's focused on the bigger standalone version of 5G model architecture, which will allow us to do the significant orders of magnitude in volume, ultra-low latency, and other technologies that 5G promises to bring. Our second experiment under these programs is 5G in telemedicine and medical training. And this is an interesting because it brings medical applications for supporting the DoD medicine, telemedicine capabilities, including from the hospital out supporting telemedicine as well as out into the field.
And, you know, could you go a little bit deeper on your telemedicine program? You know, what sort of things are you working on with 5G? How is 5G kind of revolutionizing the way that you're working with telemedicine? And what are individuals seeing now that this is a different sort of plane of existence for that sort of way of doing things?
Well, first off, 5G brings a whole new paradigm and architecture to the table from what we've seen before, even up through the current 5G non-standalone that you see advertised on TV today. That basically adds the radio so they get more capacity to handle user devices, but it doesn't bring the significant promise that 5G does. When you go to 5G standalone, it basically virtualizes what's been forward into the cell towers and things and virtualize that back to the cloud. And now you can bring large amounts of data forward or back to it and operate in the forward edge, so you can virtualize these applications, get very ultra low latency. And now you're supporting lots of sensors, whereas in say 4G you could support maybe 100, here you can support 1,000 in 5G, the capacity and the low latency. Where you're supporting augmented reality in real time, so if you think about gaming and you think about 5G telemedical applications, you'll be able to push those forward so they can operate in real time, see the data, whether that's a virtual reality application or augmented reality application. It'll be in real time while they're interacting with the patients. So the 5G promises significant improvement in the ability for DoD to support critical care at the point of care. And what that means is that they'll be able to provide more care in real time and bring more expertise to the table than they currently are. And in fact, if you think about the way with COVID and what's happened over the last year, they've been operating in a big telemedicine way where they've been pushing out telemedicine. It continues growing. And I think that's the way that DoD medicine is going to go even more so in the future. And they're going to require 5G to get there.
And, you know, this obviously goes much past something like, you know, just doing a video call with your doctor, right? I mean, this includes adding certain devices into the telemedicine network, like pacemakers or other, you know, important things, like maybe even a robotic arm or something like that, right?
Well, actually, I don't know about pacemakers,
yeah.
But it does allow you to bring multiple sensors that allow you to monitor the heart, blood pressure, and lots of other activities that are happening to the human, while at the same time being able to access in real time the medical records associated with that patient. And for example, one of the applications we have, experiments we're running or applications we're building, is telementoring. And what that does is allow us to bring knowledge that a doctor that has expertise or a specialty, say, in cardiac, bring it out to the field at a location that's far away, say, from Bamsey to Minot, North Dakota, for example. And the doctor there, while working on the patient, will be able to have the same view that the doctor back in BAMC could have. So they can share that knowledge, and he can guide him through procedures and protocols that they'd be doing on patients. And this includes, in current applications, they're able to overlay those patients with things like MRI data. The issue right now, though, is getting that technology out of the lab and into the field, and 5G's volume and latency improvements allow that to happen. So you can push this out and proliferate it out across to many locations and give that expertise. And that's the real catch. They're going to be able to, the DoD medicine is going to be able to push knowledge out and help save lives in real time. We're actually working similar applications to put out into the field, say in emergency medicine where there's a fire or some other emergency combat medicine, for example, where they'll be able to have the medics getting the expertise in the field to help save lives.
Right. That
they wouldn't have had before. They're good now, but this will give them knowledge and expertise they didn't have before. The other application we're working with 5G right now is to build training, 5G training. So one of the issues now is the mobile medics go through continuous upgrade and continuous training on the medical procedures before they deploy, while they deploy. Currently, they have to bring either the medics back to the trainers or bring the trainers to the medics. 5G will offer the capability to push that training out in real time to many different locations and to many different mobile medics who can train. And that can be done as a group, as small groups, or even individually. And so they'll be able to do more training, better training, and focus training on the current missions that they're serving.
Now, just kind of zooming out a little bit, on these testbed 5G bases and installations, how is the 5G sort of signaled out to everyone? Is it just really just one base that the 5G coverage is just over that one geographic area? Is it only for certain programs? Do you have to sign up for a pilot program? You know, how do you get access to this 5G?
So currently, the different sites are setting up different 5G test beds because they have different mission sets and different requirements. They're working to support those mission sets. Some of them are private clouds that are mobile. Some of them are making use of commercial assets. Like, for instance, Joint Base Pearl Harbor Hickam are using the commercial assets that are around the base and extending those onto the base. In the case of Joint Base San Antonio 5G, we're actually building a private cloud capability. Many of our experiments are indoors, especially the telemed experiments, where we have different medical labs set up inside our building and be running Pico cells and inside millimeter wave and Wi-Fi 6 to support these experiments, because that's what you'll see in nominal operations in the telemed. But we're also setting up a field site out at Camp Bullis where we're going to be running outdoor 5G, but it'll be a private 5G network to support the experimentation. We're also putting another one at Randolph to support experiments there for a different capability. Now, the one thing about the private, we're setting those up to look very much exactly like if they were commercial, and they can eventually tie into commercial. So we want these applications to be able to run through the cloud, but out and take advantage of commercial assets. That's what allows the proliferation to many different places and quite frankly, keeps costs down. The one issue there, though, obviously, is cybersecurity and zero trust. So we're working steadily to build cybersecurity and to lock in the zero trust in the 5G architecture to support all the different applications that we need to have. So we need to be able to, if we're running commercial, you need to be able to handle that from end-to-end security, so that if you go from the cloud where the data might exist out to the multi-edge computing where you're going to run the applications out to the user equipment, as they say, UE, that's got to be secure all the way through. For telemed, we're concerned about PHI and PII, private information, private health information. For other applications and areas, we're concerned about security of the data, for example, in terms of classification. So we're working all of those different aspects.
Right. And, I think that's a perfect segue into the cybersecurity because that's one thing I'm very interested in terms of how 5G is going to change the landscape of cybersecurity. Obviously, there's a lot more devices that are going to be connected to these networks. Therefore, the surface area for attack will be much larger. What sort of things do you need to take into account as more devices are connected and you need to protect your networks in a different way?
Well, let me start out by saying 3GPP, the international body that manages the 5G standards, has some very good 5G security standards. But from a DoD perspective, we need more, and we need better in some cases. Our perspective is from the UE all the way back to the cloud, or from the cloud all the way out to the UE. So the whole capability from end to end needs to be operate in a secure zero trust as a zero trust architecture. So we're looking at the UEs. What has to happen at the UEs? Many of the devices have dual connects these days that are coming out. So how do we handle that when I'm on a secure private slice, if you will, on 5G standalone, and then my other connection is connected to a dirty network, to a dirty internet, and so on. So those come into play. Then you have to look at the signal capabilities, because if I'm able to go through and use all these signals that are supporting RF, that are supporting the different devices and interfaces, then I have issues that I've got to protect and worry about my signal being compromised. You get into the random access network, into the multi-edge computer, those are forward deployed assets in most cases. So they offer even more services, and because of the connection to the radio access networks, you have other avenues for exploitation. Then finally, from the mech back to the cloud, you're starting into some of the traditional that we've seen, and you see a lot of lately, of cloud security issues that you have to worry about, because we virtualize those running back in cloud all the way out to the multi-edge computing. That's all controlled by the 5G standalone core, and the core is the software that controls how all of 5G works in a particular network or a particular ecosystem. So now I have added many different functions between 15 and 30, depending on how you've configured it and what you're doing with it. I've added many different functions that offer additional threat services. So we have to secure all those as well as the communications between them.
We're going to take a short break. We're talking with Jody Little, the Executive Program Manager for 5G Next Gen at Joint Base San Antonio, on Federal Insights, sponsored by Verizon on Federal News Network. I'm your moderator, Scott Massioni.
For 15 years, the federal community of government managers, executives, appointees, and contractors has started its day with me, Tom Temin, host of The Federal Drive, our daily program of the latest headlines and interviews with people behind the news, your go-to source for information about everything from IT to pay and benefits. Be informed, stay informed. Start your morning with me, Tom Temin, on The Federal Drive. Listen on air on the Federal News Network app and on Spotify.
Welcome back to Federal Insights, sponsored by Verizon on Federal News Network. I'm your moderator, Scott Massioni, and we're talking with Jody Little, the Executive Program Manager for 5G Next Gen at Joint Base San Antonio. When it comes to the individual users, once 5G might become, a little more ubiquitous, and more commercial, when it comes to cybersecurity, will they need to be doing anything differently, considering, cyber hygiene's ever changing and all those sorts of things? What might they see that's different?
Well, first off, when you talk about the users doing something different, it's really difficult to get users to change habits. So coming out of 4G into 5G is not going to be a simple task of having the users. What we're going to have to see is the architecture and the interfaces support better cybersecurity, not allowing things to happen that would cause malicious activities within the 5G network or the applications that are running. So it's really difficult to change the user habit to get them. It is not that it's impossible, but it has to start early and continue through. And we see that all the time in training different users in the DoD and so on. You still have issues. So that's going to be difficult. It has to be that the architecture and the system support it. And that's why the 3GPP spent a long time developing their security standards for the general commercial. and the DoD side, we need more and better. But still, those standards will be in place.
And, you know, speaking of cybersecurity, there's also a certain amount of base security that you can add with 5G. And I know that some of the experimentation is around that as well. You know, some military officials have likened 5G to, you know, creating these microgrids and sort of mini cities. So, you know, could you speak a little bit to the potential for that and how installations may change once 5G becomes a little more rolled out?
Well, as you watch 5G roll out, you're going to have the commercial side of it, and especially as they roll into the post and the bases, and we're already seeing this, the commercial side, because the telcos would like to subscriber base on the bases, just like they do currently with 4G, correct? But what we're going to be able to do with 5G is slice out various capabilities, which are software-defined networks within there, if you will. They're going to be able to slice those out and protect those, and they'll be almost invisible to the commercial side. So they won't mix and match where we currently have just one network and we have different capabilities. We tunnel through now, but it's still running in the same space. Well, slicing will allow us to focus on different military applications and create those microgrids that you're talking about. Those grids can be on the base. They can be from across the base to another base or around the world, for example. And Telemed's a perfect example. As I'm running, I would run a slice. I would be running at my forward edge where I have the telementoring application going. They're using augmented reality, high-definition video, sound, and sensors, and that data would run through a slice, a secure slice, all the way back to the Garrison Hospital, say BAMC again, where the specialist would be looking at the exact same scene and data that the forward doctor's looking. But it's secure in a slice. And that would coexist with the commercial networks. And you could have several or many of these running in those microgrids, if you will, those networks, those software-defined networks.
And, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about the way that you're working with industry. So traditionally, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, the Defense Department was the one that was the, you know, the forerunner at the forefront of technology and building out a lot of this infrastructure. Now we're seeing that commercial companies are doing that, especially with 5G. You know, how are you ensuring the security that you need between, you know, talking to these companies? How are you ensuring that they are good partners and that you can be good partners to them as well?
Well, our experiments with the Office of Undersecretary of Defense goes through the National Spectrum Consortium and their Spectrum Forward OTA. So an OTA, Other Transactional Authority, is a special type of contract that allows the government to bring in researchers and non-traditional researchers. And definitely security is an issue on that. But to see these solicitations, what they call requests for prototype proposals or RPPs, and the statements of objectives and work, they have to be members of the NSC. Now that's a kind of a registration thing, but it also puts them into a form of screening as well. So that's one. We're talking to lots of industries from around the country, and most of the work we're doing in the front end is unclassified work. So we're looking to bring and talking to them, here's our generalized requirements, what technology innovation is out there. And that's one of the big things about these programs, is bringing that innovation in, because the DoD just does not have the researchers or the bandwidth, especially in 5G, to define all that themselves yet. These programs will create that ability to have knowledgeable engineers and knowledgeable operations and commands that can actually define what they need to do for the missions. So that's one of the ways. The security of the capabilities, we actually have a focused on American but on approved devices. So we're looking at things like Ericsson, Qualcomm, and other devices. And that's just to name a couple. There's many different capabilities going out there. We're not allowing foreign nationals to work on the program. So that's one of the securities. And that's coming from the National Spectrum Consortium and the DoD itself on that.
And that's,
I hope that answered your question.
It does, yeah. And just to go a little deeper on that, you know, that stems from concerns about the supply chain, I'd assume, when you get down to these second, third, fourth tier contractors. You may not know what's going into the hardware. And right now, everything can be suspicious or malicious, right?
That's correct. And so, I mean, chipsets, and we actually have some technology we're looking at that will help prevent capabilities from getting inside that perimeter, and some new emerging technologies. And I can't really go into those at the moment because they're still emerging, developing. We're still in the middle of solicitation, but that will help even prevent those, so that though it would basically invalidate or render those chips null in terms of 5G anyway. So we're also looking at other capabilities to stop malicious code from getting in and taking advantage of those capabilities. But it is a problem, and it's going to be our experiments are not going to fully solve that problem. That's a bigger problem that needs to be solved at the DoD and then at the federal level. And there is work going on in that area. The sourcing is a huge issue, and there's work going on, but as you're surely aware, it takes a while to get things in place and moving with that scale.
Right. You know, what would you call some of the successes that you've had since this has started? I mean, as you said, you're a year in. What are you particularly proud of that DoD can show for the experimentation that it's done?
Well, if you look across the sites, a lot of it's been developing and getting ready for the solicitations to bid and have those correct. So our solicitations are out, and their proposals are due in 2 weeks, quite frankly. And that's been a big accomplishment. We started with three people. We're working with triple that right now, or more than that, actually more than 20 now on our staff to get this. What we just did last week, we have two mobile 5G vehicles. They're called cells on light trucks, and for experimentation. And we've been running things like Google Works, other applications in those cells. And they're set up a private network and able to share data. Now, from a security standpoint, that's not great, but it allows the capabilities to lead to where we need to get the security issues resolved by running those type of applications. Building up knowledge and staff has been one of the big issues across all the sites, because there are not significant number of 5G engineers, smart engineers around the country. They're building them quickly, but even so, many of the schools don't teach 5Gs per se, except at graduate level, doing graduate research. So that's actually a strategic issue across the country. Is with 5G coming down as hard as it is, and it's coming down like an avalanche, having enough engineers to build secure applications in 5G, understanding 5G standalone, how it's built and the architecture, is going to be an issue as we move forward. And so building up that knowledge and that understanding has been one of the things. And I'm proud of the staff we have. They've worked really hard to get there. We have some extremely good people, and we're fortunate to have a really top-notch principal investigator and Professor Brian Kelly from UTSA. He's been able to understand everything, been playing parts in 5G and 6G across the country, as well as being able to teach our staff and bring them up to speed. Great engineers, understanding 5G has been the focus.
And just a last couple of things for you, Jody. You know, I wanted to talk about the future of 5G. As you just alluded to, 5G is really just getting its footholds within DoD and really within the nation. You know, a few years down the road, what might we see in terms of what individual troops might be able to do on base just with their families, or, you know, just using 5G in general? And then what might the Defense Department might be able to do in some of the really cool things with warehouse management or with weapon systems or anything like that?
Well, one of the applications that we're working with and getting off the ground is distributed AI machine learning. And for example, it's sensors that will go out and monitor for biochem activities and alert on those with the intelligent front ends on those, and then bring that back so you can get individual readings. You can get readings on sectors and then on a region, and bring all that back, and you can have thousands of these sensors helping protect. And that can look at everything from fuels contamination to hydraulic contamination to chemicals being released in various places, to bio attacks, or just certain kinds of dangerous bacteria being around. So we're seeing that, we're working that, and those sensors will all be able to work in tandem and intelligently form a grid. As far as the families go, they'll be able to communicate much more now. So a lot of what they do today will be there, but now you'll be able to do more, and you'll also be able to faster. And I think you're going to see things, and you can't discount this, you're going to see much of the gaming world improve significantly in what types of games and level of games, getting into the virtual realities that are much more effective and higher, and they're going to be distributed across where people are able to play without having large infrastructure in their house, like big computers or PS3s necessarily. And I think that's down the line, but I think that's what's coming.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for July, sponsored by Verizon on Federal News Network.
Here's Brian Campo from the Department of Homeland Security on the Federal Executive Forum's Profiles in Excellence, spotlighting chief technology officers, sponsored by Hitachi Vantara Federal.
We're always trying to mature our zero trust. I think I've talked about in the past, you know, sort of our 2-year forecast for zero trust. One of the things that'll be really interesting is bringing data into the zero trust fold.
To listen to the whole program from Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsnetwork.com. Search Federal Executive Forum.
Hitachi Vantara Federal is built to support your mission and vision. We empower federal agencies in the digital domains that matter most: the data center, tactical and strategic data operations, and digital transformation. We bring together an unmatched portfolio of edge-to-core to cloud infrastructure, AI, and analytics that enable our customers' digital missions and propel our nation forward. Let us accelerate your data journey from infrastructure to advanced analytics. Contact Hitachi Vantara Federal today at HitachiVantaraFederal.com.
Splunk's data-to-everything D2E platform drives fast, confident decisions and decisive actions through powerful real-time insights to ensure mission success. Here's Juliana Vita, Chief Technical Advisor, Public Sector with Splunk.
Let's say that there was a breach at some agency. Well, what happens? Oh, well, let's set up a war room. Okay, then somebody from each department, they go in that room and they shut the door and they all point fingers at each other. And they say, oh, it was the network people, or oh, it was the patching people, oh, it was the security people. And they waste time and energy trying to figure out whose fault it was that could be used actually fixing it or mitigating it or figuring out how to, you know, move beyond and kind of get back to the mission. Well, when you allow that data to do the work, we call it at Splunk finding mean time to innocence. You know, you can now stop pointing fingers at each other because you can let the technology do the work so you can execute on the mission.
Splunk helps agencies turn data into doing. Learn more. Visit splunk.com/public sector. That's splunk.com/public sector.
For 15 years, the federal community of government managers, executives, appointees, and contractors has started its day with me, Tom Temin, host of The Federal Drive, our daily program of the latest headlines and interviews with people behind the news, your go-to source for information about everything from IT to pay and benefits. Be informed, stay informed. Start your morning with me, Tom Temin, on The Federal Drive. Listen on air on the Federal News Network app and on Spotify.